It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Oh, welcome to your 4th of July weekend, Independence Day. I hope you're getting the long weekend. I mean, if you're working on Monday, that is a drag. That is a super drag. Sorry if you are. Or maybe you are because you're making time and a half, or that's good. Then that's good. We've got a best of show for the weekend, but I'm just giving you a little quick intro here because I hope you are luxuriating in a nice break, enjoying your independence. Let's try to get you financially independent, because this is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. So please enjoy. It's the best of Independence Day episode of Jill on Money. Here we go. To start every program, we love to hear from you. And that means taking a call. If you want to get on the air, give us a holler at 855-411-JILL. First up today, Matt from Pennsylvania. Hi, Matt. Welcome to Jill on Money. How are you?
Hi, Jill. Thanks so much. I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. What brings you to our air today? What can we do for you?
Well, I'm looking for a little advice. My wife and I, we're 37. We got four kids.
Four kids?
I know.
Two wasn't enough? You got to do four college educations now?
You got it.
Oh, brother. You're a glutton. Okay. How old are the kids?
They are young still, which is good. They are 8, 6, 4, and we have a 6-month-old.
Oh, my God. When's the last time you got a good night's sleep? Tell the truth. Tell the truth.
I would say that was probably about 2007.
At least you're honest about it.
Yeah.
Oh, brother. Okay. 8, 6, 4, and 6 months. You are really awesome. So good for you. So you're both 37. Are you both working, or what's happening here income wise?
So we both work. My wife works part time, but full time at home. I have to make sure I say that.
Yes, of course.
But we're doing well. We make around $250,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
We are maxing out our retirement.
Great.
We have a very good matching fund, so that even helps even more.
That's good.
We have an emergency fund of about 3-4 months.
Mm-hmm.
But my main issue is that we still have some debt, and I'm thinking about 529s, and I just don't know which route to go.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the debt. A house, a loan, maybe a mortgage in there?
We do have a mortgage.
Okay. What's the house worth?
The house is worth about $475,000.
Okay. And the mortgage is how much?
We owe about $310,000 on it.
Okay. And the rate on that mortgage?
It's 2.75%.
Holy smokes.
I know.
What's the term?
So it's the PenFed 5.
Oh,
5.
Okay. So it's an adjustable rate.
So it will reset in 2019.
Hmm. Interesting. That's interesting. Okay, hold on. We're getting there. any other debt associated with the house? A second loan, an equity loan, or anything like that?
We do have a HELOC for about $30,000 on it.
Is that drawn down? That $30,000. In other words, is it available, or have you actually borrowed the $30,000?
Oh, I'm sorry. So available is about $60,000, and we have about $30,000.
Okay, got it. Very good. Very good. And that's just like a LIBOR plus something?
That's right.
Okay.
Right now it's at about 4%.
All right. That's not terrible. Tell me about any other debt, credit card debt?
With no credit card.
All right. Auto loans?
No auto loans.
What else? Anything else?
We have student loans.
Oh, look at how the voice goes down. It's almost like... I feel like a priest in this moment. I don't know what a priest feels like, okay? But I'm just going to tell you, this is what a Jewish girl as close to a priest as you get, is that when people admit to me, like, well, I actually still have some debt. But it's student loan debt, you know? Like, I wouldn't go crazy. What is outstanding for you guys?
So we have about $50,000 between the two of us in student loan debt.
Oof. It's not terrible. I mean, you make $250,000 a year. So what's the... I'm sure you have a couple of different loans there, but what would you say is the average interest rate on the student loans?
Surprisingly enough, when we got them, we both refied, and they're at the same rate, and they are at 3%.
Oh, well, that's not bad. That's good.
Yeah, it's because it's been so low, I haven't been paying it off as aggressively as I maybe originally thought I was going to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's go back for a second, though. So on the $250,000 a year, you're both maxing out retirement, right?
Yes.
Is there any money, but you got four kids. Is there any money left over when you pay all your bills and stuff?
We do, and we have roughly about $2,000 a month that we end up saving.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. So the reason I asked that question is not just because I want to give you a gold star, which I am going to give you a gold star for saving the $2,000, but it also tells me that you can afford a higher mortgage payment if we were going to lock in your mortgage right now, correct?
Correct.
Okay. This is a very interesting case. When I say, no, it's good. I think that we're going to fix it pretty easily, but okay. You may not like me so much at the end of the second segment, because I'm going to hold you for a second segment, but I think that we can solve your problem. I think that we can solve what I perceive as a problem, because you may not think it's a problem, which is, I think the only thing that's scary that you told me has nothing to do with the student loan debt, but it has to do with that adjustable rate mortgage. And that's the part that I want to try to fix or address before we even think about anything else. So that said, if you wouldn't mind, I'm just going to ask you to hang on. We're going to pay a few bills. We're going to come back and we're going to fix that problem. And there's nothing better than having a caller who comes in and sort of says sheepishly, I have this thing, but it's and we can actually figure out the answer to this problem. So hang on right there, Matt in Pennsylvania, and we're gonna figure this out. Four kids all 2 years apart, just one more and he'd have that starting basketball team. How many on a line, Mark? I'm just kidding, I knew that. When we come back, we're also going to find out whether Matt is a Philadelphia ice hockey fan or not, or a Pittsburgh fan. Maybe he's a Penguin fan. Could be. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hey, don't forget to follow us on Twitter @JillOnMoney, and you can always follow Mark at mtalercio, mtalercio. He's the best producer. Okay, we'll be right back.
Young, old, it doesn't matter. She's here to help you. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Before we went to the break, we were on the line with Matt from Pennsylvania, and Matt has four kids, 8, 6, 4, and 6 months. He and his wife are 37 years old. They're making a nice chunk of money, $250,000 a year, and saving for retirement. And it sounds to me like the retirement stuff is really going very smoothly. So that's great. You got your emergency reserve, also great. You said you've got $50,000 in student loan debt, but at 3% interest is very affordable, obviously. And you've got the mortgage and the home equity line of credit. And there's the area that we just want to concentrate on for a little bit, because like many people, you took advantage of really low interest rates, right? You had that adjustable rate mortgage, which is currently 2.75%, but it's going to adjust higher in the next couple of years, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So what I think makes a lot of sense this minute, and the reason why I asked you is, you know, about the cash flow, is that I just want to make sure that you could actually afford this, is that we're going to probably have to lock you into a fixed rate mortgage. Is this a house that you want to stay in? I should have asked that first. Let me, before we lock you in.
We think so. Our fourth one was not planned, and it is getting a little bit tight in space, but we do have four bedrooms. So we're thinking that we're going to most likely stay here for the long term.
Stick it out, man. Come on.
Yeah,
don't be messing around here, for goodness sakes. All right. So you've got it's a $475,000 house, 310 outstanding, plus 30 on the arm. You've got your emergency reserve. There's no immediate need for extra money. So I'm thinking that you're going to have to look. You're probably going to be looking at let's say a $350,000, because you roll the refi costs into the loan. So you're going to look at a $350,000 loan, and you're going to shop around, and you're going to get a 30-year fixed rate, and your payment's going to go up every month. And I'm sorry to tell you that, but that's just what's going to happen. And I think that that is really the most prudent thing to do. If you told me you were absolutely going to move in the next couple of years, then we wouldn't fix it. Just like kind of roll the dice, and that's that, right?
Right, sure.
But I am concerned that, like, I don't think that mortgage rates are going to go to 7%, but look, the National Association of Realtors said that they believe rates will be this year, probably end the year, somewhere around 4.5% to 5%. And 4.5% from your 275 is going to be like a big hiccup in your financial life. It's going to feel like a lot. But I think it's prudent, because I don't see that interest rates are going to go down substantially 2, 3, 4 years from now. I think
that we're in
this very weird cycle where we saw interest rates bottom out. And you're still very close to the historic lows. And so it's going to feel like a lot. It's going to be a difference for you guys, but you thankfully can afford it. And in my mind, the best thing that you can do is to fix that rate, go get yourself a mortgage broker, start comparing. Maybe does your PenFed, will they convert you into a 30-year fixed from this current loan, or will you have to rewrite a whole new loan?
That's a good question. I should give them a call to ask them that, because I know they do have very good rates right now on their 30-year fix, and I'm sure they would hate to lose me as a customer. So maybe they could, maybe they would.
I think it's certainly worth, at least at the very least, checking out whether you can do it, because
sure.
I think they'd rather keep the business, and maybe it just might be. Maybe you'll get a better deal. I don't know, but of course, check other sources and. At that point, what's your payment right now?
So the payment for the for my primary is it ends up being about $1,350 a month.
And then, do you just pay interest on the home equity line?
No, we've been throwing. We've been putting about $1,000 towards the HELOC, and then we were putting about $1,000 towards our student loans. Per month. And then baby number four happened, and I thought, oh, maybe I should be thinking about 529.
You can think about it all you want, but I'm taking you off the hook. You don't have to do anything about it right now.
Okay.
I think
my other thought was, should I pay down all of my debt except for the mortgage before it resets, which would roughly be about 30 months from now. So I could pretty much knock out the entire all of the debt except for the mortgage within the time of the next reset. And the max the reset would go to would be 4.75%. And the loan amount at that point would be at 290.
Yeah, but then I got to refi that, right?
Technically, yes. Yeah.
That's, I don't know. That's such a roll of the dice.
I know.
So, okay, I'm going to just give it to you straight, man. I am a wimp.
Please.
I am a wimp, okay? I don't like this kind of risk because this is not the kind of risk that I can actually figure out how to mitigate. Right. When you think about risk, right? Okay, the risk is that you got four kids and you die, and we need life insurance. That's a risk that we can mitigate. We can transfer that risk to an insurance company, right? By the way, you should have a big fat insurance policy, obviously. But this is a risk we can't. I don't know. I feel like what happens. So let's push forward. It's 3 years from now. And the Fed's been raising rates and growth is this way and that way, blah, blah, blah. And let's just say that we got a refi and you're right, you're at that maximum level. But now this it's five years from the term and now you got to refinance. And now instead of 4.5% or 5%, we're at 7%.
Well, Joe, can I ask you this? So one interesting thing, the one reason why I chose the Penn Fed, and I don't know if it was a good decision or not, but that's neither here nor there. The one reason I did choose that one is because it's their 5/5. So what the it will reset every 5 years, but then it obviously it locks and well not locks but it holds. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is that at the time of the reset in 2019, I would be at 4.75 maximum for another five years.
But then 5 years later, if you happen
what you're saying.
If you happen to be unlucky, that's the only thing that stinks. All right. I think you should talk to them. I think you should talk to them and see and shoot me a note and let me know how that turns out. Because I think we've got to at least consider these options.
Okay.
Maybe that isn't a terrible option. Maybe you and your wife sort of pinky swear and say, you know what, we're going to maybe even look at leaving this house. But even then, you know, you're 4.75%, which is great for 5 years. In 5 years, if it's 9%. I don't know. Like, I'm just nervous. And
I understand.
And the only other thing that makes me feel like a lot better about this whole conversation is you have the money to do this. In other words, you can afford the monthly hit. And most people who are in your situation can't. And that's the advantage you have right now is that you could actually absorb a slightly. But let's say it's if you're paying $2,300 a month right now, if you had the whole mortgage and if I told you it's $3,000 a month, it's not so different than what you're doing right now. And I feel like if you were to fix this loan and then kind of see how your cash flow looks, then we could potentially start talking about 529 accounts. But until you fix this, I feel like putting money in that 529 is kind of dangerous because if all of a sudden, you know, things bounce higher and it's, you know, a number of years later, you can't start using your 529 money to refinance your house in 10 years. So I think what I'm saying is this. I don't think there's no emergency, like the alarms are not blaring, but I think you have an opportunity, Matt, to go shop around, first go back to the originator, talk to other people, and let's think about fixing this while rates are still pretty affordable. So thank you so much for calling, and I wish you the very best of luck. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. That's our phone number. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
It doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
I'm so in love with you. I just had to let that play a little bit. I love it. Welcome back. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Email us, askjill@jillonmoney.com. If you want more Jill, more cowbell. More Jill. You can go subscribe to our new podcast. Mark and I are doing this together. Better Off. You can download that wherever you get your podcasts. You can just go onto our website, Jill on Money, and you can see iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Kind of like this. A little different. Different music. different stuff going on, but check it out. Better Off. That's our podcast, so check it out. It'll be fun to have you. All right. Let's go and take a call. It's Harold, who's on the line from Boston. Hi, Harold. Welcome to Jill on Money. What can I do for you?
Hi, Jill. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Great. Well, so here's my question. My wife and I, we own our current house, but we're hoping to get a bigger house in a couple years. Mm-hmm. And get a bigger and upgrade and a more expensive house. But our hope is to keep our current house and use it as a rental. And so what I'm trying to decide is, should I save up a large down payment for the new house, or should I put down a minimum down payment for that new house? And alternatively, I could take that money and either, put it all towards paying off this mortgage, mm-hmm. or take all that money that we're saving and put it into the market. So I'm trying to decide what the plan should be over the next few years.
Oof, all right. Let's go back in time for a moment here, Mr. Harold. How old are you?
34. My wife's 38.
Okay. Kids?
One kid, 1 year old.
1 year old, okay. Current house is worth how much?
About $375,000.
Mortgage outstanding?
$200,000 on a 15-year.
Okay. New home, ballpark, what would you spend?
Something $600,000 or $700,000.
Oh, my God. You're really, jumping up, man. All right. Crazy. And why not just sell the house, roll the proceeds into the new home, and get a mortgage on that?
Well, it's, we're fortunate. We both are making good money now. We're making about $300,000 a year. And our plan is we've been living entirely off my wife's income, and we've been saving all of my income, and we both make about 50% of that. So we're able to save about $100,000 a year. And
wow.
Because we're not in any rush to move, our thought is that, we've got all of this savings.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it might be great to diversify and have a rental house. I think we're in a strong area
mm-hmm.
in order to do the rental. I know some other people who rent in the area, and I think it would be a good option. So that's why.
Okay, cool. And what do you think you could get in terms of rental income on your current house?
Somewhere around $2,500 a month, $2,750 a month, somewhere in there.
And would you manage it yourself, or would you hire a management company to help manage the property?
I guess I'm because we plan to stay quite local, I think at least initially I was hoping to manage it myself. And I think if it gets out of hand, maybe I'd hire somebody.
It really depends on the tenants, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But that's all right. And the current mortgage, the $200,000, what is the interest rate on that?
We just refinanced, so it's 3.5.
Okay, great. You got it in there right before things jumped, right?
Right.
Okay. So now let's talk about the new home. So the game plan would be that you would put how much money down on the new home?
I'm thinking over the next couple years, we could probably save at least $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
We've got about $30,000 saved already outside of our emergency fund.
Mm-hmm. And then so you would put $200,000 down and finance the rest on the new home, right?
Right.
Correct. Okay. I'm sort of intrigued by this. I guess that you're like you said, you're not in a hurry to
right.
actually do this. The fly in the ointment could potentially be that by the time you gather up the money you need to put the down payment on the new home, that we see a spike in mortgage rates, right? And then it would just
right.
it would just be more expensive to carry the house. It sounds like you make a lot of money, so it doesn't it doesn't essentially mean that you're going to be crushed by that higher mortgage rate. It just may seem a little bit less appealing at that rate, right? And I guess the other thing that you could do is if at that point in a few years and you guys are in your 40s, you can always say we actually don't want to move. If things just, you're not locking yourself in, right?
Right, that's exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea. Other question I have for you is tell me a little bit about how much money you have saved right now.
So, you know, in addition to the equity in that house, we have about $500,000.
Okay. In retirement accounts?
It's about $400,000 in retirement accounts and another $100,000 in, you know, yeah, outside of that.
And you guys are maxing out your retirement accounts, right?
Yeah, we are. Unfortunately, my work doesn't offer a 401k, but my wife is, and we're doing the backdoor Roth as well.
Oh, great. So that's cool. So you're maxing out as much as you can. Backdoor Roths you're doing. Anything for that one-year-old baby for college?
We put $11,000 into a 529 for him.
Okay, that's enough. I'm totally kidding. Just one shot. It's not a bad idea. I want you to be flexible in this, though. I don't want you to. I mean, I think it's an interesting idea. I think that part of the appeal of it is likely to be that interest rates stay low enough that it makes buying that new home appealing. You know, if you had a $400,000 mortgage and all of a sudden the interest rate was 6 or 7%, it might not feel as interesting. But I think you can go for it. I mean, it's not to me. This is you make a decision about whether you want a bigger house or not. I don't necessarily think this is like the smartest, best decision in terms of your own financial planning, because really your best plan right now would be to stay in that house that you have and enjoy that really low mortgage interest rate and keep saving tons and tons of money. But if you want a new house, then that's not a bad way to do it. So I wish you the best of luck, and thanks so much for calling, Harold. You're listening to Jill on Money. Our phone number is 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. Why people break up? Oh, turn around and make up.
Young, old, it doesn't matter. She's here to help you. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Can you believe it? I want no
medicine. It's love game. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. And you can always email us. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. And got this email from Frank, who says he had read an article I wrote about estate planning, and he said he's got a problem. My wife and I hired a respected estate lawyer in 2013 to draft a Medicaid trust. Now, just interjecting here, gang, if you don't know what that is, it's just it's a way to move your assets out of your estate so that they are not counted towards a nursing home stay. And so Frank continues, the trust is so that our three daughters and their husbands would eventually inherit our approximately $500,000 of property and securities and avoid the possibility of nursing home expenses. Although the three families are not well off, they are doing fine. Two of the daughters have two children each. We have a will. My wife and I happily planned for the signing of the documents and a subsequent lunch to follow. I never gave a thought to the problems that might ensue with this offer. We told them about what we did and asked when they could be available for what we thought would be a happy occasion, and it never got that far. What followed was an aggressive and accusatory questioning from one of my daughters, to wit, "What is this about? We don't want to be sued. This sounds like it could be a problem with taxes. We don't want to go anywhere without seeing all the documents first and having our lawyer review them, etc." Those were some of the questions, all couched in attitude of distrust for what we thought we had would be welcome and an act of love and generosity. My wife and I were stunned. My daughter finally got around to asking me questions about the process. I replied that I wasn't the one to answer them, but she could come to the signing and ask the attorney. If she didn't like what she heard, she could walk out. She, speaking for the other two sisters, said she'd get back to us. After 2 years of silence from all of them, I thought it would be best if I isolated our one son-in-law who seems financially astute and involved in the real estate business. I suggested to him to research our plan, check with our estate attorney or his own, or ask his father, who's a CPA, for advice. In essence, I asked him to act on behalf of the others, to spearhead our attempt to get this done. He agreed he would look into it, but after a brief contentious phone call with someone at our law firm, he never mentioned it to me again. That was over a year ago. And for all intents and purposes, the matter is now dropped. We see them often. We have a loving relationship with all of them. All six parties are college educated and hold master's degrees. One holds a doctorate. In the meantime, our estate remained unprotected from possible nursing home expenses, and the loss is theirs, but it hurts us too. I am 75, my wife is 73. I'm thinking of taking aside the couple that needs it the most, then setting up the signing. Then I would notify the others that they have the option of signing or walking away from the plan. However, I don't want to jeopardize the sisters' relationships when in the future the holdout should realize that they were wrong and start to wonder where their share is. Your thoughts would be appreciated. So Mark and I were reading this email, and we absolutely were just, kind of floored by it. So here are my thoughts. I know that estate planning is incredibly thorny. I know that it is emotional. I also know that there is a lot of fear around these kinds of issues. And when I think about what you are trying to do or not do, it is presumably for the kids. And if the kids are going to be suspect or strange about it, then maybe forget it. That is what I'm inclined to do, actually. I'm worried that just given the history thus far, that this situation could escalate and get nastier. And if it has often been the case when you have a few kids and one is treated differently than the other in terms of an estate issue, that it can cause a lot of problems. And a lot of problems down the line that for you, for them. So in my mind, I know this sounds crazy. I know you did all this work, but I don't think that I would actually do anything. I think that you might scrap the plan, keep your money, use your money, hope that you don't need to use it for a nursing home or anything like that, and be that, let it be. I think you've done everything you possibly can do, and I would just let this be. Yes, that is my decision. And I'm sorry that this was contentious. It probably should not have been. And more to the point, it's their loss. And then you can just let this go. Okay, I tried to do something nice for you. Your parents, you've had this happen before. I won't read you what Mark really thinks, but thank you for writing that. And I'm very sorry you had to go through it. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Let's follow up that last segment with another estate question from Carrie, who says she and her husband know how important it is to have a will, a letter of intent, power of attorney, healthcare proxy. We're both 62. We've got three grown children. My issue is we own a condo with a $150,000 home equity line of credit. We've got two cars and a nice 401k. Our savings are about $4,000. We are both still working, but we do have to buy health insurance. Estate attorneys have been quoting me fees, around $3,000, to prepare these documents. My question is, since my financial situation is not complicated, is there a less expensive way to get these documents implemented? Regards, Carrie. You know what? Carrie lives on Long Island in New York, where it is expensive to do a lot of things. But I'll tell you what I would do. To just get a will, a letter, a power of attorney, and a healthcare proxy, and just what I would do is I would go to a smaller community where there is an estate attorney. So I just happen to know this area. So, for example, Carrie, if you live in Nassau County, what I might do is I might go to Suffolk County, and I might get someone who is an estate attorney that's, you know, farther out, who may not be in that same boat in terms of the, I don't know, like the escalated price of these kinds of things, and will quote you something more reasonable. I agree with you. $3,000 seems like a little bit too much for those documents. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to try to get you a name of somebody that maybe who can help you out, because the alternative is you need a lawyer to do it. I really do believe that. But the alternative is that you have to go somewhere else in New York, another New York attorney. And I'm not sure I want you to do that. Stay tuned, Carrie. I'll get back to you. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. That is our phone number. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.